I want to first wish everybody a good tovach and be paseach chver echsanya and thank the distinguished rabbanim of this space at Knesset, Rabbi Billet and Rabbi Axelrod, for inviting us to participate in this beautiful, beautiful, important Ida, in which the purpose of this tonight is really to analyze the significance historically, halachically, hashkafically of Yom Yerushalayim when it comes to the ultimate history of Klal Yisrael and the ultimate fulfillment of many of the promises made by our Chazal, made by our Nevi'im earlier than that, when it comes to the ultimate redemption process of Klal Yisrael and we come to the end of days. The topic is a very interesting topic, but the problem is the time we have available tonight is very limited. And therefore, when it came to the development of what we're going to be discussing tonight, we're going to try to be mitzamtzim as much as we can and try to obviously deliver as much as we can in a small period of time, allowing, if there are respective presentations, to be able to give you ability to ask questions from the audience to make this as informative as we possibly can. I want to get to my part of the topic very quickly and try to give you a quick overview of where we've gotten up until this point in time and how Yom Yerushalayim fills in the picture that was promised by Chazal and how current events that we're experiencing now are a continuation of some of the miraculous phenomena we saw taking place on the time of Yom Yerushalayim and the Six-Day War. I first want to go back to the beginning in the Chumash in Parshas Lech Lecha, that when the Ribono Shel Olam ultimately decided to pick Avraham Avinu as the progenitor of Klal Yisrael, there was the famous Bris Ben HaBesarim. When you look at the various mefarshim over there, there are actually four different principles articulated in the Bris Ben HaBesarim that really define the Ribono Shel Olam's relationship to Klal Yisrael in the present and in the future. And these were the four promises that were made that are important to understand the context of what we're discussing this evening. Number one, the Ribono Shel Olam told Avraham Avinu, as becoming the ultimate Ahman Nivchar, the first thing I'm promising you is the indestructibility of the Jewish people. Klal Yisrael will never be destroyed. The word Magen is used as a code word to connote this, according to many of the Mefarshim, but it means they might be smitten. Some parts of Klal Yisrael might unfortunately be killed over the centuries, but Klal Yisrael as an entity are promised eternal existence, and that was promise number one. Promise number two, Yosef Chutza Chazal tell us that he told Avraham Avinu that the events that are going to take place for Klal Yisrael in all different levels, whether political events, physical events, spiritual events, are going to be Shulevi Derech HaTeva. You're not going to function with the normal concepts of law that affect other nations on the face of this earth, and therefore, if that's the case, expect a future Shulevi Derech HaTeva. Even Avraham's production of his first child was Shulevi Derech HaTeva, but that was going to set the pace of Klal Yisrael in our future existence. The third promise was the promise of Eretz Israel, the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam, in fact, delineated what's going to be given to the Jewish people later on as our inheritance. There was a delineation of the nations who we were going to replace, a time and with which this replacement was going to be. But the fact is, this specific giving to us of Eretz Israel was an internal phenomenon, not a one-time or not something that's temporary. And the fact of the matter is, there are only two factors in the Torah where the word Marusha comes to replace the word Yerusha. Yerusha means an inheritance. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael and the Torah, both have the word Marusha. my dear Rebbe of Salvation Zatzal, others have said Marusha means not an inheritance, it means a heritage that is integral to the essence of the people who have this heritage, something of eternal existence, something that will always be connected to these people. Torah is called the Marasha, Eretz Yisrael is called the Marasha, nothing else is called the Marasha, which means the eternal connection of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael is guaranteed, not so much in Parshas Lech Lecha, but in Parshas Ve'eiro, where Eretz Yisrael is called the Marasha, like later on in Sefer Dvorim, you have Torah being called Marasha as well. The third phenomenon is Klal Yisrael told that this is not a freebie. To have Geula, you have to be Zocha for Geula, for redemption, to be able to live in Eretz Yisrael. They were forewarned that if there is quite obviously rebellion, you're going to go into a mode of galus, and that would depend upon Klaus's Meisim Tov and Meisim Haraim. But whichever way it goes, whether you're in galus or you're in geula mode, in Eretz Yisrael, outside Eretz Yisrael, your kesher to Eretz Yisrael will never ever be severed, and this is guaranteed to Klaus on the Bris Ben HaBesarim. The fact of the matter is, you have to ask yourself the question, many people do ask me as a rabbi the question over the years, why, if you can mekayim most of the mitzvahs of the Torah throughout the entire world, why did the Rabban Hashem wanted us as Klal Yisrael to live in Eretz Yisrael? Why is there a mitzvah, Yerashkan v'yashavtem ba, which the Ramban quotes as one of the mitzvahs, tayag mitzvahs, of the mitzvah of yeshiva and yerusha b'Eretz Yisrael? And the fact of the matter is, the Rishonim give two reasons. Number one is a practical reason. There are many mitzvahs that are taught in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvahs like Klal Yisrael Eretz, especially the agricultural halacha, shemitah, yovel, and other trumos and maizras. So therefore, on a pragmatic level, the mitzvahs of hakrevas hakrebanos, that can only be done in Eretz Yisrael, and that's one major reason. In fact, Moshe prayed to be around to go into Eretz Yisrael, to mekayim those mitzvahs, he could not be mekayim chutz laretz before he left this world. But the Ramban and many other Rishonim point out there's another reason. And that is, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, there's a special unique phenomenon Eretz Yisrael has to us as Klal Yisrael that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted us to experience, which we can't experience anyplace else. The Ramban and Pashta Achrimos is the place where he really is marach upon this, but I want to say Bikitz and Nimratz, because this is a major concept of tonight's entire purpose. The fact of the matter is, Eretz Yisrael is the only place, according to the Ramban, that there's the direct connection that we have between ourselves and the Ribbono Shel Olam. In the rest of the world, when the Ribbono Shel Olam set up the concept of Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence, there was the middle management with Malachim and other entities involved serving as surrogates for the Ribbono Shel Olam between people living below and the Ribbono Shel Olam above. The only place on the face of this earth where the Ribbono Shel Olam has a direct connection to the people living below without any surrogates in between is only found in Eretz Yisrael. There's Zerek Hashgacha Pratis. The pasuk in Eikav Ein Hashem Elokecha Bo Mereshit Achos Hashanah, that pasuk really is the pasuk that connotes the unique, intense eyeing of Eretz Yisrael, the Hashgacha Pratis, the people living there. And the purpose of that Hashgacha Pratis is not just to be under just a tremendous divine supervision of Hashem, but it also means to give us greater connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That connection, that presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has generated a unique Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael, the Esa Kedushas, that allow people who go to Eretz Yisrael to connect to Hashem not only on a Hashgacha Pratis level, but allow the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael to propel us on higher levels of spirituality, of connection to Hashem, mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban say, even mitzvahs atali beguf, like a mitzvah tefillin, have a different connotation when it comes to connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam and sanctifying ourselves and doing the same mitzvah when we do in Chutz Laretz. So when it comes to quality of mitzvahs, connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, direct Hashgacha Pratis, being exposed to Hashgacha Pratis and having Hashem allow us to Avir Der Yisrael, lift us to a higher level of connectivity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eretz Yisrael has that specific concept which we can't experience any other place on the face of this earth. But Ramban in his famous Medrash, which he wrote for Rosh Hashanah, says, if I have to compare Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael, I give the following mashal. The whole world except for Eretz Yisrael was looked upon as the chotzer, the major courtyard of the king's palace. The king's palace, however, is only contained in Eretz Yisrael, and the closer and closer you come in Eretz Yisrael to the Makom HaMikdash, the place of the Makomos HaKadoshim, you're coming to the inner sanctum of that divine palace, and you're coming closer and closer to the divine presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Eretz Yisrael is looked upon as actually the palace of the king, the place that his most dear and beloved people, Klal Yisrael, are given the schus to live and the mitzvah to live, and the ability to connect to him, and therefore that is the whole reason that the Rebbe Shem gave us Eretz Yisrael when it comes to this type of spiritual connection. When it comes to Klal Yisrael and our ultimate return to Eretz Yisrael, but obviously the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted us to return to Eretz Yisrael and become ultimately the Yarshim of Eretz Yisrael, the heritage of Eretz Yisrael on the highest level. But the fact of the matter is, the Rebbeinu Shalom also told us in the Torah, various Nevuahs, we see in the Nevuah today, B'chukosai, later on Pachas Kisavai, that there's a realization that people sometimes, even great people sometimes sin, and it could be clients that have corporate sins that put us in a mode of godless momentarily. So the big question which the Gemara Masechtas Sanhedrin deal with in Daf Tzadiches is that when it comes to the ultimate redemption at the end of time, as we're coming out to the most of the Messianic era, which Chazal say is a period of approximately 2,000 years, she could come early, could come later, depending upon the spirituality of the Jews, the Gemara, based upon the Pasuk in Yeshaya of the Itach Hashanah, tells us that there are two possible geulos formats that are possible at the end of days. Chazal say the Achishenah coming quicker is a geula that is a zuchus, where Klal Yisrael have the spiritual merits to undergo redemption, And that geula is compared to supernatural phenomena, people flying in the air, a very super interesting and supernatural phenomenon, which are mentioned from Psukim and Sefer Daniel. So therefore, it's compared, if I have to compare it, to the supernatural geula qualities of Mitzrayim, where the Rebbeinu Shel Olam changed natural law on every level, from Yetzias Mitzrayim, when it came to Kriyas Yamsev, living in the Midbar, a concept, Shaloi B'derech HaTev, Hashem was in total control, and we as human beings sat back and benefited from it, but the Rebbeinu Shel Olam controlled the entire scene. The word Be'ita connotes a geula, which is basically B'derech HaTev, of qualities were not spiritually worthy, but the Rebbeinu Shel Olam already told us in Sefer Yecheskel, that if Klaus at the end of time are not worthy yet, because most of the Jews are assimilated and acculturated, he made a hakafa of the ultimate redemption at a certain period of time, it'd be a chil Hashem not to fulfill his divine promise, which is recorded in the Torah, recorded in Nach. And there, if he says, Lamani Esser, because of the sake of Kiddush and Shemaim, even if you're not worthy, I will redeem you at the end of time. That's called an Ita type of gula, which is called a gula that is B'derech HaTeva, and if I have to explain what that is, giving a mashal, that means that in order to be able to deserve for that gula, we require human hishtadlus, being involved with what's called Rishon HaMalchus, being involved with the nations of the world who have geopolitical control of Eretz Israel, to deal with them, negotiate with them, force politically their moves to give it back to us, and that is what's called the gula shalom zachos. Sometimes we have to do other things, and when it comes to fighting wars and other stuff, but we have to be involved in taking the gula shalazachu in order for that gula to take place. What's interesting is when the Gemara wants to give us a mashal of how we understand the gula shalazachu, they compare it to ani harechav alachamar, to a poor person riding on a donkey. And then the Mefarshim point out that nias means the person who is basically empty from mitzvahs, the gula shalazachu. What's the milo or the lack of milo riding on a donkey? The problem is you feel every bump in the road. You sometimes go up, you sometimes go down, you sometimes have successes, sometimes you have failures. It's a bumpy road, but you finally get where you have to get to, but there are going to be all different types of impediments, all different types of problems you suffer as you take that specific trip. So Chazal already foretold two types of gulas, didn't tell us which one it's going to be, but they're already factored in by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, two hefatimsis of how we're going to be redeemed. What's interesting already, when you come to the 1100s, 1200s, the Ramban in his parish, the Shir Lashir, and the Radak in his parish, the Sefer Tehillim, already give us their opinion what they think is going to happen. And what they basically said is they see the actual ultimate goal at the end of time is going to be Gula Shel Zachu, and the term that the Ramban uses in the parish, the Shir Lashir, and the Radak uses in the parish, the Sefer Tehillim, is Berishyan HaMalachis. With the helping of the non-Jewish world, we will return to Eretz, which means he's already forecasting Gula Shel Zachu at a time period which historically there was no way of the Umas Olam ever coming together at the time to give us anything. So they're talking Baruch HaKadosh, what's going to happen in the future. Skipping a whole bunch of years because I have limited time, I'm running now to the 1700s. When the Vilna Gaon was asked by his Talmidim what is going to be the format of the Gula at the end of time, what's happening now, so the Vilna Gaon, who Chazal looked upon as having Ruach HaKodesh, they compared him to the Tanoim, said to his Talmidim, I see what's going on in the world, it's going to be Gula Shel Zachu, Gula Shel Zachu, and if that's the case, you have to already start taking Mishra B'Derech HaTeva to return to Eretz Israel. He sent his Talmidim from Europe to Eretz Israel to rebuild the infrastructure religiously, spiritually, physically, to start building Eretz Israel. Ironically, his Bar Pelukta, the Baal Shem Tov, ended up doing the same exact thing. And therefore, these two groups started to rebuild Eretz Yisrael, being told that you have to be Derech HaTeva, start to do what you can to build the physical infrastructure, the spiritual infrastructure. And the fact of the matter is that began the movement back to Eretz Yisrael. One of the phenomena of what some of the Mefarshim asked the question, and the Gaon was asked the question, what did you see, Rebbe, that makes you all of a sudden feel that things have changed now, that it's time to return? So he quotes the Gemara in Daf Tzadiches, going back to Masechta Sanhedrin, tells us, if you want to know what is a simon of Kates Megula, of the ultimate redemption, so he put Gemara points out, based upon a pasuk we had in this week's Pasha, and Pasha's Bechu Kosai, and that is when Hashem says you're in a state of Golus, Hashemoseh So'ares, of Shomel Vecha, Yoshvim Ba. When you're in a state of Golus, Eretz loses its capacity of being Eretz of Aschala V'Davash, not only for Klal Yisrael, but the Ramban points out, B'Shem the Medrash, that even Umas Olam were not able to make Eretz on Eretz of Aschala Devash in our absence. perform the place in a state of shmama, and as long as there are cells in a state of shmama for Jews and non-Jews, it's not able to be agriculturally developed. It's a simin, we're in a state of golus. What's the simin of gula? So the Gemara says, Kates Magula. When Eretz once again returns to the capacity of becoming an Eretz Avaschal of Lavash, you can agriculturally develop the land, and you see productions taking place. That's the simin we've gone from the golus mode back to the gula mode. And in the Tekufa of the Vilna Gaon, where up until now people tried to settle Eretz, Jews and non-Jews, and the agricultural phenomenon of swampland was not very, very, very practically capable of them to really do anything to change what was going on, he already saw Yechidistik Jews going in his time, going to Israel and successfully building farms for themselves. He saw the agricultural production starting to develop again. In his mind, this is showing a simon of the case of the rule of the beginning. So he told his Talmidim, if that's the case, go back, rebuild the land physically, start making farms, start making places to live, start developing Makamish Kadosh when it comes to learning centers and shuls. That gave him the impetus to give that specific tzak. To skip many, many years, because my time for presentation is limited, I'm skipping now to the 1900s. In the 1900s, what really actually caused the Gedola Olam to realize that this Gula Shel Hazachu process is really taking place is the historical Balfour Declaration in the year November 2, 1917, where Arthur James Balfour, Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs of Britain, said in the name of the King of England that His Majesty wants to establish a Palestine as a national homeland for the Jewish people. This specific Tzav and Lav, which was mentioned by the Secretary of Foreign Affairs, was written up as the Balfour Declaration given over to Rothschild to deliver to the Jewish people. But what it showed is that the geopolitical people who were in control of Palestine at that time, which was Britain, are now willing to try to facilitate to bring the land back to the Jewish people. This didn't happen out of a vacuum. The Jews were soliciting behind the scenes. They're working with the Rishus HaMalkiyus, trying to convince the government to do such. They finally acquiesced, and that was the production of this specific Balfour Declaration. What made this even more cogent was a couple years later, you have the Palestine Mandate of the League of Nations of July 24, 1922, where they basically took the actual Balfour Declaration and they gave it substance, they gave it essence, and they defined how they're going to turn the land back to the Jewish people as something that the Ummah Sa'olam are going to do at this specific time. What is interesting is the way the Gedola Olam of that time reacted to it. And unfortunately, many people are not aware what I'm going to mention now, because they're aware of other shitas, but this is the way the people we look upon as Gedola Olam reacted to this event. The Meir Simcha of the Vint, one of the great literature Gedola in Europe at that time, said, if this is happening, we now see a Gula Shel Hazachu taking place, Ummas Olam giving it back to Eretz Yisrael, the Gula Shel Hazachu. Not only is the Gula Shel Hazachu, we see that Nevuah taking place, but the three oaths that they used to throw in our face, that we shouldn't be murdered against Ummas Olam, we shouldn't be Yalav HaChemer, all of that stuff has literally been taken away, because we're not taking it back by military force. We're not rebelling, but it's being given back to us by a united group of the nations of the world who on their own free will are willing to do such. Those shulas no longer apply. And basically speaking, he therefore gave his two diskashrus. You don't have to be worried about these shulas anymore. And he encouraged Klal Yisrael now, everybody, to participate in the redemption of Eretz Israel. What is interesting to note, that when the Chafetz Chaim was asked the same question, he also saw a tremendous, tremendous movement taking place, politically and otherwise. He called this Ikfisa de Meshicha. He told Jews at that time that we have now Gula Shel Hazachu taking place by land in Eretz Yisrael, and literally start returning to Eretz Yisrael. He foresaw Nebuchadnezzar Lashoah taking place, and he told you, if you want to be saved from destruction of European Jewry, the place to go is going to be Eretz Yisrael. This is a very famous, famous statement of Chafetz Chaim. But he was convinced also a Gula Shel Hazachu. In the Hasidic world, believe it or not, you find the Gedolim of the real Gedolim of that time seeing the same exact thing. When you came, for instance, to the Avnei Nezer at that time, who was the greatest of the Hasidic Rebbes and one of the greatest Lamdonim in the Hasidic world, he basically told his Hasidim, but I want you to know something, that the Gimel Shuas never existed in the world of Halacha. None of the Gedolei HaPeskim, whether it's the Ram or the Rosh, the Riff, or anybody else who quotes the Sugis and Shas, ever brings it down Halacha L'Masa. So the question is, these three oaths, which the Gemara Dash and Masek Subis, Mepasik and Shir Shirim, when did it take place? Where did it take place? He says, if it would have taken place here on this earth, this event should have taken place during the end of Bayis Rishon, Yirmiyah Navi, Yeshaya Navi, somebody should have mentioned the Yeshua is being hushpet to Klal Yisrael publicly before they went into Golos Babel. You don't find that in Tanakh. He therefore comes to an incredible conclusion that if this did take place, it happened up in Shemayim, Bezdin Shemayla, where every nation has a certain type of malach that represents them, Salamayla representing each and every nation. It could be in the debate above they came to these conclusions, but he says we have a principle of halacha liba Shemayim hi. So whatever happened in Shemayim has no halachic basis down here. There are no shuls to worry about. There were never any shuls to worry about, and he encouraged, as being one of the great Hasidish Gedolim of that time, that his Hasidim should go back and return to Eretz Israel. The Ostrasa Rebbe, who was the great tzaddik in Europe at that point in time, was also fasting to try to forestall the Chorban of the European Jew from taking place. He was approached to sign a paper against Zionism and such, and he said to the people who basically asked him to sign such, who are you to tell me who should be involved in putting through the Gula Shalom Zachu? In fact, the Vilna Gaon said many years earlier, when he was asked by his Talmidim who are going to be the leaders of this Gula Shalom Zachu, he quotes the Zohar. The Zohar says, the Gula Shalom Zachu, the B'nai Bonav of the Eir Rav are going to lead us back, which means non-religious of the Jews are going to be the ones who are going to be very involved with the Chiba for the land, for whatever reasons they have. They're going to be in the forefront, but that has nothing to do with your involvement. You go forward. The Ostrov Sarebbe came with the same opinion, but he said he went one step further. If you want me to bring a midrashic source to show you what's happening today, it was for Swam Bachazal when it comes to their Ruach HaKodesh. See, he quotes a medrash, a Tanhum medrash, Tanhum, where the medrash says that every nation has an animal they're compared to. When it comes to Malchus Eldon, they're compared to a chazir, to a pig. What is a chazir? So it's not based upon the fact we're dealing with chazir, it's the word chazara. That there's going to come a time that Malchus Eldon will be mafsa, the keser, lebala, bring down the crown back to its owner. He says, what does that medrash mean? So he says, Malchus Edom, which was basically initially Esau of the Roman Empire, became the Christian Empire at a certain point in time. He says, let's see what's happening today. We have the Notzerim represented by the British Empire taking the land away from the Ishmaelim and the other Ganovim who stole it from the Jews over the centuries, returning it back to the Jewish people at this point in time with the mandates of basically the League of Nations. So you have a team of the Medrash Chazal of the Chazara of the Kesel Labayla happening in front of our eyes, and you're questioning whether this is the Yad HaKadosh Baruch or not. So he also gave a confirmation, this is the Yad of the Rabbanu Shalom, facilitating with Gilu Gilu Vashol HaZach the events taking place. So the fact of the matter is, World War II stopped a little bit from the events continuing, but after World War II, we then had the UN phenomenon. The UN phenomenon is a miracle in its own right. Or Salvation Kohli said that if you look at what happened in the UN, knowing the UN, it's mamish anes nigla that this ever happened. In the actual vote that ultimately took place, it's the first time in Jewish in the history of the UN that the Russia and America voted on the same platform to ultimately acquiesce to create a homeland for the Jewish people. Truman was not such a willing participant. It's only because he had a good Jewish business partner that convinced him to let the Jews in the back door with the maids come into the White House to talk to him, and finally he was convinced to acquiesce. And something which many people do not know, which I saw on newsreels at that time, that after Truman acquiesced and they voted, and they got the votes they needed from the UN to basically confirm and finalize what the League of Nations starts, the UN basically finished to give the land back to the Jews, as the nations of the world's majority vote. Truman wanted it back out because the Secretary of State came and said that the Arabs threatened to take away the oil, take away the money. And Truman was going to summon his ambassador to the UN to go to the Circumstance Council to call an emergency meeting that America wants to change its vote and basically say, let's keep things status quo. What is interesting, fascinating is, and this is in the newsreels, is that at that time, who was in control of Russia? Stalin. Who was his major person in the UN? Gromyko. He calls Gromyko to the office. This is recorded in the newsreels. And he says to him, this is the first time we in America ever had an agreement. I wanted to be a Jewish state in the Mideast. America wanted initially. We're not allowing America to back out. So ultimately, it was Stalin and Gromyko that ultimately caused that UN plan to ultimately be never have rescinded, something most people not aware of, but historically, the newsreels and the actual documentation of the time shows something that Bederach HaTeva, the great lover of Jews, Stalin, was the one who ultimately forced Truman to keep into the deal itself. Now, to fast forward very quickly over here, I want to mention the following. We finally came back to Eretz Israel, and ultimately speaking, after the UN vote, which took place November 29th, 1947, and May 14th, 1948, a year, that's when ultimately we had the declaration of the state of Eretz Israel by Ben-Gurion. A couple of days later on, the Arab world basically declared war against us, and that alone was an incredible miracle. We didn't have an army, we didn't have an air force, we didn't have anything. We had a couple of people who were freedom fighters with guns and some machine guns, and the fact that the State Department came to Truman and said to Truman, don't worry about it, because the Arabs, in a week, there won't be any Jews left to even discuss about. That's why the Rabbanu Shem, who Hashem wants the redemption to take place, there's a pasuk, Oymi Yichim Esuma Kel, Yosef with the Rabbanu Shalom. 2 years later on, the Arabs, with all that they had working for them against us, they got us for the armistice, and that was the first miracle of Rabbi Miyatim that we experience when it comes to the Heyer Declaration of Eretz Israel. But the only problem was, is when you look at what we got from Eretz Israel, we got a lot of land to live upon, but all the Mekonis HaKadoshim that are dear to us, that are very special in Eretz Israel when it comes to Makam HaMikdosh and everything else, that was not part of what we acquired at that specific juncture. For many, many years, even though the Arabs lost that war, they tried many other types of wars in between to try to bring us down. And ultimately speaking, we now came to 1967. We now had an organized plan with Egypt and with Syria and Jordan and all the other Arab nations coming together now with their biggest war machine that they were able to assemble. And even now, by now, Baruch Hashem, Israel had its own army and also had its war machine. But when it comes to numbers of what they had connected to what we had, we were still outnumbered on every direction possible. The fact of the matter is, I remember in 1967, I was brought up in YU, and I realized at that time how scared people were. They were fearful, first of all, when it comes to the eradication of Eretz Israel, because they threatened to drive the Jews into the sea. They put blockades all over. I mean, we were literally surrounded from all sides, cut off from everything else. The UN troops were taken away from Iran, so there was nothing there to protect us, except the Rabbanu Shalom. And the fact of the matter is, in YU alone, there were thousands of boys who basically volunteered to go to Eretz Israel at that time for the purposes of working the farms and other things, so that everybody who was able to work, fight in the army should be able to go to the army, so they should maintain the infrastructure. I remember still as a child at that time what was taking place in YU and the incredible effort that was applied to try to help them. But the fact of the matter is, everybody was sitting because quite obviously it looked very bad. The ness of what happened in 1967 was the fact that even though everybody was saying that it could be total destruction, you should know the only gadol at that time that told Klal Yisrael not to worry historically was Lubavitcher Rebbe. He's the one who basically said, Hashem is protecting Klal Yisrael, protecting Eretz, Hashem Yalachim Lechem. He was the only one who reassured them. Everybody else basically was sitting together with everybody else. The war began. But Israel was given a machshava by the Rebbeinu Shlom to do something that was never tried before, and that is, they realized the biggest threat was the air force of that time, of Egypt. They flew a mission, I still remember seeing it on the screen, where they were able to basically go under the radar, and within a couple of hours, destroy the entire air force of the Egyptian army without being detected before they hit them, literally destroying the air power superiority of the Arab world over the Jewish state. From that juncture on, in the next 4 or 5 days, miracles happened that you can speak to the people who were there. I mean, it's just things happened when it came to explosions against tanks and other things that literally never ever destroyed the equipment that was going. The Arabs were going in different directions. They got confused where they were going. At the end of the day, Eretz Israel won the war. And ultimately speaking, you have Egypt, you have Jordan and Syria ultimately coming to the table to sign, quite obviously, a seizure of war document that Israel mandated that they should sign. The crucial factor over here, however, is a war that people were afraid of extinction. Not only we weren't extinguished, we didn't have any extinction taking place, but the fact is the landmass was then tripled. We had 3 times the landmass as a result of this Muhammad. And all the Mekomos Kedoshim that we didn't have up until this point in time, the Temple Mount with the Kosel Ma'arvi and that whole place, Kever Rachel, Maaseh Machpelah, the Kever of Yosef HaTzadik, of Shimon HaTzadik, all these places that we didn't have in our initial coming to Eretz Israel, overnight, all of a sudden, we have this at our availability. The Har HaBayis alone, and the fact that the Kuslam HaRavi, you have people who are secular Jews, people who are anti, that all of a sudden started running to destroy the Beit Tehillim, and their tears started coming down when it comes to seeing what the Hashem did for them. The feeling of the regish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a miraculous way, in the B'derech Tevet Degaway, helping us fight a war that was impossible and finish it in 6 days, had an impact. And there were thousands and thousands of people that became Ba'alei Tshuva. Many of them ended the Ba'alei Tshuva yeshivas that developed later on were a result of this specificness. But the fact of the matter is, what we had now was a fulfillment of why Hashem wanted us at Eretz Yisrael initially. Think about it. Up until 67, the places in Eretz Yisrael that were the most kaddush, that you can have the greatest intimacy between yourself and the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Kotel Maravi, the Makom HaMikdash, we didn't have access to it. Now, with this war, the Six-Day War, what made this difference is now what Eretz Yisrael, the purpose of giving us an eschavus, a connection between ourselves and the Ribbono Shel Olam, we now had the practical ability to do such. That really raised Eretz Yisrael to the level of the reason Hashem gave it to us initially. And that specificness has Baruch Hashem continued to this very day. And so we see quite obviously over here, miracles taking place, the Kiyum of Eretz Yisrael for 70 years, with all the adversaries and antisemites we have against the world. The UN, if they would hold the vote today, would never ever pass what they passed at that point in time. That's why the Rav always said it was the Neshel Lebederech HaTeva, that the vote ever took place, period. But the fact of the matter is, the Ness has continued and Eretz Yisrael has developed, and the biggest Ness is the following Ness I want to mention to you. And that is, if you look in the Parsha, which we read today, Parsha B'Kul Kosai, the Torah talks about what is the matzav of Klal or in a state of Gula and a state of Galus. And we're in a state of galus, we are afraid of all our adversaries, we're pursued, we're persecuted, and we're destroyed. And anything that confronts us scares us. If you're in a state of a geula, you become a superior military power, and you have the capacity to go around and to chase many, many people that are more, you know, when it comes to sizes of armies, when it comes to military equipment, you can defeat greater armies and more superior armies. And there's a certain sense of what we call of gestalt. You're going to go up to Kamimios, you feel that you're an entity on a military level, that's when you're in a state of Gula. Rav Kasher found a text that I want to share with you tonight. Many people are not aware of it. The Gemara in the Sechtes Ksubis, it talks about the Gemashruas, talks about the Pasuk in Sefer Shira Shirim. It says, and therefore, he says, you should not therefore stir up the world, stir up the whole phenomenon, and start any type of coming back b'milchamah to capture Eretz Yisrael or to take it by force. There were three, four psukim in Sefer Shir HaShirim that mention that expression, and Torah's Avos Techpats, and that's how the Gimel Shuos are recorded in the Gemara. Comes Rav Kash and he says, but there's one other Medrash Chazal found that basically tells you when that pasuk or those concepts disappear. He says, when Eretz Yisrael, when the Jews develop an ability to have the ability to defend themselves militarily against the nations of the world, and have the military power to do such, and have the equipment that's even supplied by the Ummah's Elam to accomplish this. When you see that phenomenon happening, that they're now looked upon as a major military power, that's a simon that this pasuk or these isurim no longer apply. We've gone from Golus to basically Kehula, and that's one of the simon mohalkis that people are not aware of, that's quoted in the Medrash that he found in his encyclopedic knowledge. This is the first time we have in Jewish history, if you think about it, Eretz Yisrael as the Jews having an ability to fight wars and to protect ourselves on levels that we never had in Jewish history after 2,000 years after Churban Bayis Sheni. We're feared in the Mideast. We're respected in the Mideast. One of the interesting phenomena that just took place 2 days ago, which many people aren't even concentrating upon because you keep on seeing different things, is when Israel went into Syria and destroyed all the bases of the Iranians in Syria. What is interesting is they destroyed everything, the whole infrastructure. What was fascinating was the reaction of the world at large. The normal reaction didn't happen. There was no UN assemblage of the Security Council to criticize us. All the European countries that normally criticized kept their mouths shut. Mm-hmm. Even Russia said, Gunished, and he even said, we're not going to send our SAM 300 missiles anymore to Syria to supply them with that. Syria begged Israel, don't include us and be a machayev us together with the Iranians. They're the one who shot the missiles. We were not involved. Therefore, we shouldn't be punished. You'll ask the question, but they shot it from Syrian bases. Oh, those Syrian bases that were taken over by them against our Rishus. Everybody was sittering because of the Israeli military power demonstrated with that. We never had this in Jewish history before. This could only be the Yad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ibed Rein the Gansa Maisos. And what's also interesting is the fan club of people who were clapping. All the Arab countries, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, or all those other chevra who normally like to criticize Israel, either publicly or quietly were clapping and thanking Israel for eradicating a threat that they felt threatened them as well. So the fact of the matter is, you see over here a change of attitude that a couple of years ago you would have never dreamt is even a possibility. I want to mention something, and I want you to listen carefully, because it's a political comment, but it is a reality comment. When it came to the question of who we're going to basically elect for the President of the United States, that was a hot question in our community, who to vote for, who not to vote for, and I understand both sides. I understand both sides, what the concern and the criticism was of both candidates. But what basically drove me to want to vote for Trump rather than for the other one was when there was a specific debate that he had with Clinton, and the discussion was partial birth abortions, in which Trump basically said, God forbid that we should allow such a thing to happen, you're murdering a child, and therefore he showed a sensitivity to religion, despite his other behavior, but he showed a sensitivity and respect for religion, for abortion. And her response was, religion has to basically grow up and basically change its principles to conform with modern ethics and philosophy and become more modernized. You know, forget about the biblical mandates, you gotta modernize. When I heard that, my mind was made up. I want somebody who supports God and the Bible, not somebody who opposes and thinks that we have to change the Bible because it doesn't fit our common, what's considered politically correct or not. The fact of the matter is, this man, no matter what you want to say about him, is the first president in 30 years that was willing to say explicitly that Yerushalayim is the eternal capital of Eretz Israel. He's the man who made the State Department take away from their latest update when it comes to the territories of the West Bank. The word occupied has been deleted from those specific texts. He's the man that has a love for Eretz Israel. He's moving the embassy there this week, very symbolic. What's interesting to me is there's a coin that's being produced now in Eretz Israel. I don't know if you saw it yet, but it's on the internet, in which they have a coin celebrating the 7 years of Eretz Israel. But what's interesting is what they put on the front of this coin. There are two pictures they have upon it. The picture of Koresh and the picture of Trump. And the lumdis behind this, the left, the lumdis behind this is what historically Persia did for the Jews in Bayisheni was the Gula Shel Hazaka. We had to solicit the Persian Empire. You read the Gemara Maseches Megillah with all the Nevi'im and all the Anshei Knesset, whatever we had at that time, there was tremendous political solicitation, whether it was Koresh, later on Dayavish, and then Achashverosh, to get the land back to us. The fact of the matter is, their intercession as being the superpower of that time set the stage for Bayisheni, which the Gula Shel Hazaka to take place, and to have the rebuilding of the second base of Mikdash, even though there were people like the Palestinians at the time protesting and trying to stop it, they had what to say. We haven't had a person on that level who's a world leader, who has the stage and the ability to basically set the tone that Israel is now being supported by America on a level that cannot be interrupted or stopped by anybody else. Eretz Israel belongs to them, it's their eternal capital, Yerushalayim. Eretz Israel belongs to them, it's their homeland. And to state this and to support this and to push this, and to have a person like Haley in the UN pushing that agenda continuously and censuring the UN, we haven't had this in thousands of years. The fact of the matter is, the concept of Rishian HaMalchus returning us when it comes to Gula Asida, in the final Gula, when it comes to Gula Shabbat Zachu, we see it happening with our eyes right now taking place, and people are not even cognizant of it. So the miracles that started in the Six-Day War of the whole Eretz Israel being returned to us, and the returning of all parts, and the Mekomos Kedoshim especially, the Shah HaShemayim, you look at the Gedolim who looked at that specific war, Six-Day War, Chaim Shmuel Levitt says that the Vilna Gaon never had the Swiss to stand at the Shaar Yerushalayim to pray on behalf of his Mishpacha. Because now we're going to have the Swiss now to stand at these Shari HaShemayim and pray on behalf of Klal Yisrael throughout the world. These are Nisa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe finds and said, these are Nisa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You go down every Gadol who's recorded historically that period of time. These are Nisa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'derech HaTeva when it comes to Gula Shel HaZachu. We're now living in that type of Tukufa today. We're seeing miracles take place every day. The growth of Torah in Eretz Yisrael, the amount of people learning there, and the yeshivas and the seminaries are in levels Beryl Wine said we never had in Jewish history before. Eretz Yisrael is looked upon now not only in a from a Torah perspective, but the Chasam Sofer says one of the makif apatishes of being an Arla Goyim is not only going to be in the spiritual realm, but Eretz Yisrael is going to be known as that place that the high-tech technology, medicine, science, the technology is going to come out of Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, the same way Torah is going to come out. We're going to be looked upon as the capital of the world when it comes to all of these latest phenomena taking place. Rabbi Yisrael is happening in front of our eyes, and nobody's even looking at it from that perspective. We're living in a time of an incredible Kiddush Shem Shemayim. We're living in a time where Eretz Yisrael is growing, the population is growing, Klal Yisrael is succeeding. And the fact of the matter is, our Hallel, the people, a lot of people say on Yom Yerushalayim, is the bare minimum we can do. We have to support Eretz Yisrael. We have to be involved in Eretz Yisrael, whether to live there. If you're not going to live there, send your children to live there. Support it, send our children to learn there. Financially, economically, we have to be involved in it. Chazal tell us, and I'm going to end with this, as my, the second speaker can address to you, is one last thought that I want you to think about. And that is Chazal tell us, Echad Adoba Ve'echad Metzapel Eretz. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it says, Ish Yuladba, the Gemara Dash, the Masechtas Ksubis, one and the same is the person who lives in Eretz Yisrael, one and the same is the person who has a desire to want to be there, to live there, and to promote Eretz Yisrael. Chazal point out, and the Sefer Charedim says it very explicitly in his formulation of Tayag Mitzvahs, that there's a mitzvah of Abba of Eretz Yisrael that exists. There's a mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, Ahavas Teira. There's a mitzvah of Abba for Eretz Yisrael. There's an Isav, Yom Yosef, Eretz Chemda. There's a mitzvah of having Abba for Eretz Yisrael. Jews have to demonstrate that Abba. If Hashem sees that Abba, that Mesiris Nefesh, willing to be Moshe Nefesh for Eretz Yisrael, then the Rebbeinu Shalom responds. And he saw the Mesiris Nefesh, the people willing to die for the sake of Haganah Samadina, for the sake of the building of Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbeinu Shalom has responded on levels we never imagined. We're coming closer and closer to the end of time. We're coming closer and closer to the Zman of the ultimate redemption. We have to do ours. But we have to use the Six-Day War as the springboard to recognize the Nisa HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking place all around us, to see the Gula of Eretz Yisrael proceeding with Rishon HaMalchus and heading in the proper direction. Let's hope and pray B'Shana Abav Yerushalayim HaBenu, you'll be able to see the final Gula with the Mashiach coming and finishing off the final touches that have to take place for the ultimate building of the Beis Hamikdash to take place. Let's hope and pray, Meshon, will be zochet to see that. I know the Gedolei Rabbanim of this base, the Knesses, have a tremendous Abba for Eretz Yisrael and a support for Eretz Yisrael. I can say, by and large, a good percentage of all the Rabbanim of this community have a similar feeling, no matter which part of the community we live in. Let's hope and pray that the collective Abba for Eretz Yisrael of Klal Yisrael throughout the world will be seen and recognized by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tefillos will be heard. And therefore, Mirza Hashem, Lashon HaBav, Yerushalayim HaBenuya, I want to call upon our next speaker to please come and address us.